From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk ambiguous language. Sometimes we think we know what we're saying, and sometimes we're really wrong. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, as they do, of course, every week, two people who are unambiguously language experts, Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hello, Kathy Petras. You're right there at your home in Armenia, Spain. And Ross told you last week to straighten that picture on the wall behind you. And so it looks wonderful.
I did remember.
Has your life just felt a little calmer and more in place since then?
It's true. I no longer feel diagonal, which is a very nice thing.
Ross Petras, of course, you've still got all of your very old books behind you. They all look neat and tidy, honestly, compared to what my books look like now, and they aren't even nearly that old.
Oh, really? Thank you, Fletcher, because I'm always accused of being a slob, and I sort of am one, so that's like a really nice compliment.
He is. He really is.
Well, I guess there's nothing ambiguous about that, Ross being a slob. We know what that means. But something that is typically quite ambiguous is every single other thing about the English language. And so today, Kathy and Ross are going to present us with some more examples of the ambiguity of English.
But Fletcher, first of all, I have to congratulate you on that brilliant segue.
Thank you very much.
Sloppiness into ambiguity.
I would just like to say the ambiguity of English would make a great jazz band name, wouldn't it?
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I like that.
Isn't it kind of cool, the ambiguity of English?
Do you think it would be like free jazz?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. We got the idea. We got an email from a Kerry in Philadelphia who wrote us with a personal pet peeve and a plea for help.
Lovely.
The email said, I get so bothered when people say one of the only restaurants in town that serves good Mexican, one of the only times I saw him cry, etc., etc. If something is the only, it's one thing. There can't be one of others, right? How can I combat this crime against English?
Well, we have bad news for you,
Gary. Oh, no.
Very bad news.
Oh, no.
And we can just take a quick look even at Merriam-Webster, which is one of the defining dictionaries of English in the States. And we looked up one of the only, and sure enough, it's an idiom, and it means one of very few, one in a small class or category. In other words, you can use it and be considered correct. We also went backwards in time. And you look at Google Books, 1770, the dramatic censor, one of the only. Sale of authors from the 1770s, one of the only. It's been around a long time. And it's been used in that sense.
You know, maybe it's a little easier to accept it, taking into account what you just said. Like in a literal sense, maybe it's not correct, right? But it's an idiom. And so idiomatically, but Kathy does not seem to agree.
I have to interject.
Yes?
Interjection. Actually, Merriam-Webster also, if you look up the word only, there are three definitions. One was unquestionably the best. Two is alone in a class or category. And three is few.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So only itself can mean few.
Oh, fascinating. I had no idea about that.
No, it's really interesting because you do automatically, I mean, when Kerry wrote it, at first you think, wow, you know, this is reasonable. But the problem with English is you can criticize English and you go, that's really unreasonable. And then you go, well, maybe not. That's the ambiguity of English. And now we're going to move on into some really problematic and annoying ambiguities. But thanks, Kerry, for that. I thought that was really an interesting question. And we both sympathize, but unfortunately, we cannot.
I think that we should say in closing that you're not one of the only people who's probably bothered by this.
Yes.
I like it. Sorry. I've never thought about that before. You know, I've thought about, of course, unique and whether something can be very unique and so on. But I'd never thought about that phrase "one of the only" before, and so I'm really glad that Carrie brought it up.
We have very smart listeners.
We do.
We really do. Yeah. No, I know. Scary smart.
I never thought of it either. That's why I really liked it, because we did really think of it. It made us think, which is really good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And speaking of which, keep on sending these in, because a lot of people send in things that we didn't think of. They're unexpected and they're wonderful to talk about. But until then.
Ross seemed pretty pleased with himself on that. Okay, what's up?
Well, it's a really bad segue.
Okay, the word in question is until.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? We're going to give you a sentence. What does this mean? This is a very strange sample sentence you wrote, Ross. The kidnappers have given us until October 11th to deliver the documents.
Oh, right. Until October 11th. This is a big problem. I get emails from there's a critics association I'm in, right, for my movie criticism, and they'll say something like, "You have until October 11th to send in your ballot." And I always have to email them. Actually, what's even worse is they often say you have until midnight on October 11th to send in your ballot. And I'll say something. I'll respond to them saying, "Okay, does this mean 12 a.m. on October 11th, or does it mean technically 12 a.m. on October 12th, which is what a lot of people think midnight on October 11th is. So these kidnappers, do they want their money at 12 a.m. on October 11th? Could it be end of business on October 11th, maybe 5 p.m.? When do you want it, guys?
That's a good take. I like that take, Fletcher.
So until October 11th, I mean, the idea is that's our deadline. I just don't know when on October 11th we're talking about.
But Fletcher, you do think, I think let's get one thing straight though. You do think it includes October 11th.
Okay, though, I agree with you. But now you say, I danced until dawn. To me, that sounds like you danced, it became dawn, I stopped dancing.
I agree with you, Kathy. Yeah.
Right?
Although you could argue that dawn, though, is a specific, like, it's not like there's not a long dawn. It's just sort of dawn. So you can't dance during dawn, can you?
Well, yeah, I think you can, because you go, oh my gosh, it's dawn. Like, or as I say, dawn. So, you know, dawn to me is like a little time. Isn't it like at least a half an hour or so?
This,
I don't know.
I think in most circumstances, I would assume that until also includes whatever that deadline is.
I don't think
it's all that ambiguous.
Okay, but Fletcher, I'm going to ask you another sentence then, because this one does seem a little bit ambiguous. I'm going to be at the office until Friday. No, until Wednesday. That's not even making it work. I'll be in the office until Wednesday. Now, does that mean you're there? I would kind of think that you're not going to be there on Wednesday.
Yeah. I agree with you on that one. Yeah. I don't know why, but that one definitely.
I kind of do agree with you. That doesn't... interesting.
That's a really good one when you think about it. I'm going to repeat it. I will be in the office until Wednesday. I automatically go, uh-oh, I better get you on Tuesday.
Yeah. I think that is definitely a case when I would ask them to clarify. And if I'm doing that, then it is ambiguous. Yes, definitely.
Well, this is why until is considered both inclusive and non-inclusive. It's all dependent upon context, and that's where the ambiguity comes in. And that's why I think we should never use the word until again, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay? Can I bring up something that, I mean, I don't assume you'll bring this up just because there's a huge universe of things you could bring up right now about ambiguity. But people really disagree about what this Saturday and next Saturday means.
Oh, that was coming up, Fletcher.
Okay, so you were going to bring it up. Okay.
Bring it up, Ross. I'm pulling it up. This was the one I actually posted to my friends on Facebook because I was curious. And I said, Ross and I are working on a episode about ambiguity in English. What does it mean? I said, today is, what was it, Ross? Like, you know, Monday the 22nd or whatever the hell it was. And I said, we're going to be doing something next Thursday. What is next Thursday? And there was a lot of disagreement. Mm-hmm. So, Ross, you want to start?
Well, Fletcher, actually, let's ask you this. Because Kathy and I both have a very distinct idea of what next Thursday is. And both of our spouses have very counter distinct. I think they say opposites attract, and we both marry people who are...
And they're obviously... I was just going to say, they're obviously wrong, right, Ross?
They're you obviously and I, wrong, they're wrong, and we married them, I think, to correct them.
Love but, them,
okay,
but...
Let's see if we would marry Fletcher.
Okay. Right.
Okay, so we'll say it's Monday, and we're talking about next Thursday.
Correct.
Right.
Now, if I were having a conversation with someone, I would definitely ask them to clarify because of exactly this problem. But my personal default is that next Thursday means the Thursday of the week after.
Fletcher,
this Thursday. Yeah, this Thursday is the Thursday that is coming up.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. Right, we can
right.
marry you, Fletcher.
You're completely correct. That's what we think. I mean, not correct. You're completely on our side.
I say
that's
it's correct.
What we think of this,
but how about this? Let's take it a little further out. What about Sunday? What if I said next Sunday and it was Monday?
Okay, it's still next Sunday is still the Sunday. Next Sunday is still the Sunday that's not in the week you're in, I think.
But sometimes Sunday is the beginning of the week for people.
I know, and they're wrong about that.
Well, so if it were Monday and I said we're going to do this next Sunday, you would think it was not the one that's 7 days from now, you would think it was the one that was 14 days from now?
Fletcher, you got me there. That's a little bit ambiguous for me again.
Yeah.
I'm pretty strict on the next and this, but on that one, it's far enough away that I think I might be a bit.
That's actually, I see your point. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. I mean, that's as far as I can get, right? Because otherwise we're actually into the next week. But I, you know, if it were Thursday, I said next Sunday, I would not think the one 3 days from now.
Have you all heard the British usages or not?
No. Uh-uh.
Do tell. No.
Okay, I'll be there Sunday next. Mm. Sunday next is the next Sunday on the calendar.
Right, Sunday next is this Sunday, in effect.
Yes, yeah. That's what we would say. Right. I'll translate that into Petrus Fletcherese, yes. Then they'll say, I'll be there Sunday week.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure they still do it, but Sunday week would be a week from the coming Sunday.
Yeah, I remember that in Aggies, I think.
Agatha Christie had it. Yeah.
That helps. It does help. It sounds weird because we don't do it, I guess, but it helps. I think if we had something more like that, that would help a lot. I mean, I thought we did this and next, but people don't agree about what this and next means.
No, it's a really interesting problem. I think it's, I mean, in the one lesson we've so far learned is, with these ambiguities in English, it's best to really clarify when, what do you mean? Or this, I think this coming Sunday.
I like that. Yes. This coming or this is fine. What got me though, is when I asked people, a few people, I'm looking at one, here's one reply that said, depends what month it is, how many days they're in.
What?
Yeah. And that's when, and then another friend then said, that was my first thought too.
What?
And then here, Cage Ross, depends on the month. It's like, well, I don't get it.
I don't get that one either.
I don't understand that for the life of me. It's like, why does like 30 days half September have something to do with
well,
next
maybe
Thursday?
Maybe what you should have done is you should have put the rule in English is next Sunday is when it's in the 30-day months.
Look, if I have to figure out what month it is to figure out what day we're talking about,
I know,
I'm not gonna, I really should have asked.
And then I love it. This is my favorite reply. I said, who knows? Is there a legit answer? It's like, all right, baby.
Okay, so that's the real question. Is there a legit answer? Or are we all just needing to ask each other what we mean when we say something?
I think the rule of thumb is you say coming, this, or the date is what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does cause problems. I've had problems at home with that. I'll tell Sly, her, like, let's go there next week or next Sunday. And she'll think it's like this Sunday. And I'll think it's 2 weeks from now. And she'll go, you ready to go? And I'll go, no, we're going, you know, and then I'm in problems.
Well, that is what's interesting, because both Randy, my husband, and Sly Ross's wife are from the West Coast. So I do think it might be a regionalism as well.
Huh, yeah.
I like Monday week as a thing. I think that's really good.
Monday week also sounds kind of classy.
Yeah, it does. But I can't believe we've just let ourselves stew in this ambiguity for so long instead of coming up with something like Monday week and whatever you said the other one was. Oh, Monday next and Monday week.
Well, that's a real dilemma, Fletcher.
Is it now?
This is an easier one, and I think this is clear. Okay, dilemma. Now, what does dilemma mean?
I say dilemma.
You've got two counteracting ideas, right?
Yeah, but what does the die part mean? The reason I said dilemma is because I'm trying to give you...
Yeah, two, right?
Two, right.
Yeah.
And then lemma is a Greek term. It came from a Greek word meaning a proposition in logic, I guess. So it means basically you're talking, and the Associated Press style book and Garter's Modern American Usage both say the dilemma means between two different things.
Mm-hmm.
And other people say it doesn't. How do you feel about that?
Let me think for a second. Yeah, that's a real dilemma because I could choose between this one or that one. No, I mean, I pretty much always just use it with two. I don't know when else. If I have three options, I'm not going to say that's a real dilemma.
You're not?
No.
See, it's interesting too, because I would. Kath, what about you?
Yeah, I use dilemma to mean like I'm tortured by this problem. Mm-hmm. I don't mean it to mean two choices. I really don't.
It's funny. Ever. It wouldn't even occur to me to say dilemma if we were talking about more than two things. I don't think about dilemma meaning two things. It just wouldn't occur to me to say dilemma. That's interesting.
That is very interesting, because I would not do it the way you're saying it, which is the technically correct way.
Yeah.
You're on the horns of a dilemma. I mean, there are only two horns, presumably.
Well, dilemma can mean problem in the dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
So I think at this point it can mean more than two. I use it as just general. I have a real...
I do too.
You know, even though I do, at least I think, maybe I'm wrong about myself, but I think... I just use it for two. But even though I do, it doesn't really bother me at all to use it for just a general problem. Just like I don't, you know, decimate doesn't mean reduce by a tenth to me, right? It's, you know, these things get more general sometimes, and that's fine.
I just, out of curiosity, looked up dilemma in a different dictionary. Okay, Merriam-Webster says situation one has to choose between two or more things. Cambridge, two things. Collins, alternatives, which implies two clearly. Dictionary.com, two equal. So yeah, two is more common, but oh, Britannica, I like that. A difficult choice. That's easier. Okay. That's smooth. Yeah, I use it much more liberally than you do. I'm like you, Ross.
Interesting. Well, I think that's fine.
The next one is the one that always throws me.
Ugh.
I hate this.
I do too.
Okay, speaking of dilemma, we're doing bi-weekly, bi-annual,
God.
Bi-monthly.
Oh, man. Yeah. You always have to ask, right? Does it mean twice a week or does it mean every other week? Does it mean twice a month or does it mean every 2 months?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? It means both.
Right.
Yeah, this one's nuts. Like, it really does mean either one.
There are two things that we do know. What does bicentennial mean?
That one's 200 year. Can you say the 200 year anniversary? Uh-oh, people are going to get mad because I said year and anniversary in the same sentence.
But you're right. But it doesn't mean, we know it doesn't mean, it's never been, or at least to my knowledge, it's never been used to mean twice a century.
Right.
The problem is, okay, biweekly used to mean pretty much only twice a week. But now it's more commonly used to mean every 2 weeks. So you had a flip from the 1800s. Yeah, which I don't even understand how that happened. But biannual, you don't usually mean biannual. You rarely use to mean twice in a year, right? You usually mean, you usually do. Yeah.
Let's quiz Fletcher on this. You want to use the bi in a sentence with the year, but you want to say every 2 years. And you want to make sure it's technically...
Oh, that's a toughie, Ross.
I know in art exhibition terms, they often say biennial.
Yes. Very good.
Bien.
Yeah, generally speaking, biannual means twice a year. Biennial means every 2 years.
Boy, I still wouldn't... Gosh, this is just... It's another one of those cases where I can't believe we haven't fixed this problem. Because every single time, I would have to ask for clarification. Every time.
Next one is, well, the quote we picked, because I just love that, was Dr. Nick from The Simpsons saying, inflammable means flammable? What a country! It's like, thanks, Dr. Nick! We agree!
This is interesting. I remember when I first learned about this, I was in elementary school, and in the bathroom at my elementary school, there was a very large yellow metal cabinet with letters in bright red on the side that said inflammable. And I asked my dad, what does that mean? He says, well, it means it can catch on fire. And I remember saying, but I thought that was flammable. And he said, well, it's inflammable too. Even though inflammable should mean it doesn't catch on fire. Because in means not.
Well, it, not necessarily.
Yeah, it turns out.
This is where we go into our Latin, Ross.
Yeah, well, it's, you can thank the Romans for this one. In most cases that we know, means not. But in sometimes in Latin can make the verb change and make it transitive. Sometimes it can be causative in this case. And sometimes it can be an intensifier, like, boy, is that flammable. In this case, it's probably the causative. It makes it flammable. It makes it burnable. So the in this case doesn't mean not. How are you supposed to know that? I don't know. So I think we should, let's get the in out of inflammable and make it very clear to everyone, I think.
Well, the weird thing, though, is twofold. Number one is when we look this up, in the 20s, they dropped the in. They made it flammable because inflammable was the first version that we had. Mm-hmm. And then everybody thought, oh my gosh, that sounds really confusing, as we all have discovered. So let's like make it flammable. But they kept using the in still. So you had, that's when the flammable came back with the in flammable at the same time.
I'm sort of confused.
Wait, so they tried to fix it, but
they tried to fix it by dropping the in, because inflammable came initially from the old French and it was inflammable. Mm-hmm. It was not flammable.
Which comes from the Latin. Yeah.
Right. So it initially was inflammable, but in about the 20s, I think it was, they were worried that inflammable was confusing.
Which it was.
So they said, let's make it flammable.
So instead of fixing it, we just ended up with both.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so how do you say something isn't flammable? Unflammable? I never hear anybody
not
say.
Not flammable.
Not.
You so say not flammable.
There's no prefix. It's just not.
No.
Okay. The real horror is in French. In French, it has two ins. In.
Are you kidding? Oh my god. No. So you say, sacre bleu, I can't do French. Flammable?
Wow.
By then, I'm already burned to a crisp. I think not combustible we should start using.
Yeah, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to do a brief, we're talking about ambiguity, and they're basically in English, technically, in any language, there are two types of ambiguity. There's lexical ambiguity, which were the words we just covered. And there's also happily syntactic ambiguity, which is where a single sentence or a sequence of words can have different meanings, which leads us to
crash blossoms. We've talked about them in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Yay!
Everybody loves crash blossoms.
Those are those ambiguous headlines that get completely confusing. And I must say, when you look at groups online of like grammar, you know, people going like, oh, this is the one thing I constantly see. And as a former news writer, I have to say, it's tough to write a pithy headline with X amount of words to fit in this space without being ambiguous. Mm-hmm. So I think we should cut them a little slack. That was my only little thing to my former news people. So.
Okay, we have the classic. This was from last year. Sheep farmer injured after wolf attack in Wapsie, ordered to be shot.
So the farmer is ordered to be shot?
That sounds like it, doesn't it?
Okay, but how would you rewrite that in a pithy way to make it clear that the farmer shouldn't be shot, but the wolf? Because this is not easy, and that's the one thing that always gets me.
Let's see. Sheep farmer injured after wolf attack in Wapsie, ordered to be shot. Well, that doesn't... That's really bad. There's no reason. Other than we know that wolves are likely to be shot, there's no reason we would think that the wolf was the one to be shot from that sentence. That's a terrible sentence. That's a terrible headline. I don't know. I probably just wouldn't include all of that information in the headline. Just have sheep farmer injured after wolf attack in Wapsie.
I would say wolf ordered to be shot after attacking and injuring sheep farmer.
Yeah.
It's not very pretty, but it says it.
Okay, another headline that I think we mentioned maybe last time we talked about crash blossoms, but it's so good, and so we should talk about it here. Hospitals named after sandwiches kill five.
That's why never go to a BLT hospital.
That's right.
Egg salad really bad.
Egg salad general hospital. So I guess sandwiches probably from the hospital cafeterias killed people. And so the hospitals where those sandwiches were eaten have been named.
How would you rewrite that?
What about hospitals identified after sandwiches kill five? I mean, it's still a silly headline, but it's pretty easy to change named to something
That's
else.
That's good. I like that, Fletcher. That's a good one.
He's a newsman.
another one. I'll read this out loud. Infant pulled from wrecked car involved in a short police pursuit. I mean, it probably didn't take that long if it's an infant, right? It probably was a very short police pursuit. Okay, so the idea, of course, is that the car was involved in the short police pursuit and there was an infant in that car. How would I rewrite that one?
That's a tough one.
It's hard to not make it sound like the infant was driving the car. I was going to say, like, infant rescued from wrecked car after short police pursuit, but...
That's good. I like that, Fletcher.
Yeah, but
it still
sounds like the infant was the one driving the car.
I think that one actually kind of like gets a little glosses over there.
Yeah, yeah, maybe a little bit. All right, let's see. Okay. St. John Ambulance to teach teens to help stab victims.
Now, they're tough there.
The way I said that is sort of the ambiguous thing about it. It's of course they're to teach teens to help people who've been stabbed, but this of course the way it's written, stab victims, it could be a verb.
Yeah, I think maybe you could do St. John Ambulance to teach teens to help victims of stabbing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stabbing.
Or even stabbing victims.
Stabbing victims.
Right.
That's even better.
I don't know. You still picture them holding them down
But you wouldn't say to help stabbing victims.
No, I guess not.
Okay, and we'll close out with one more about hospitals. Boy, hospitals just seem to get in a lot of trouble in these headlines. Hospitals sued by 7-foot doctors. Now, if you see this written, you see there are no hyphens or anything in here. And so hospitals are actually sued by 7-foot doctors.
Yes.
Doctors of feet. Podiatrists? Is that what? Is
that's
what that's
good. Yeah. Perhaps podiatrists might have been a better choice. Yeah. Although I like this image of these incredibly tall doctors, like probably annoying doors are too short for them. I don't know. I mean,
it's possible.
They're trying.
I don't, there have to be, I don't know about a lot, but plenty of 7-foot doctors out there. Tall people
I'm
can
sure
be doctors.
I'm sure there are. Okay, if you're a 7-foot doctor, please get in touch
that's
with
right,
us
that's
immediately.
Right. You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org, or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.